Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information, go to darusha.ca/weapons. Episode 10, Chapter 19. Dex knew that it was up to Annabelle to make the next move. If he hounded her, he'd just be making the situation worse. But he hated the feeling of not being able to talk to her, of not knowing what she was thinking. He picked up his cooling cup of coffee and peered into the mug as if there was some answer hiding in the dregs of his drink. He dumped the contents into the recycler and took the bottle of rum down from the shelf. He poured a short drink into the coffee cup and took a sip. He felt the warmth slide down his throat and settle in his belly. It didn't make him feel better exactly, more like it made him feel less, which was good enough for now. He sat back in the chair and linked into his office. It was still a workday, so he might as well work. He sat at his desk and eyed the stem-laced glass of whiskey still sitting where he'd left it. What was the point, he thought. There was no chemical on the planet like avoiding his real life to help him get lost in a case. He dumped the whiskey into the wastebasket and watched as the liquid crystallized just before it hit the bottom. Dex marveled at one of the nice things about virtual worlds. They clean up after themselves. He shuffled through the files on his desk and found where he'd left off reading about the various reasons why the light of the simulacrum ought to be wiped from the face of the virtual Earth. There weren't that many people who had specific complaints about the organization, but there were some, and they were interesting. Julio Cook had been a member of the LOS, according to his many posts about them. He reminded Dex of one of those musicians who learn a new instrument, then think they can immediately not only speak knowledgeably about anything to do with the thing, but also tell everyone else what they're doing wrong. Cook came to the light of the simulacrum about 6 months before his post started, and he freely admitted that prior to his exposure to the congregation, he'd never thought seriously about the nature of the physical universe and how human-created universes might play into the nature of reality. However, once he'd been to a few services, he apparently had some kind of epiphany and began to decry the LOS as posers. Dex couldn't be bothered to follow the man's thought processes, but he did pay close attention to the vehemence with which those ideas were expressed. Cook particularly liked to use words like immature, naive, and unsophisticated to describe the congregation of the temple. That alone wouldn't have made Dex pay much attention, but Cook spent one post describing what was wrong with the structure of the temple itself. He specifically pointed to the portal-style door, the decorations on the walls and the podium, as, quote, poor replicas of that which inspires a creature to seek the numinous, unquote. Dex didn't have a clue what that meant, but he knew exactly what Cook's next phrase meant. If the sad states in the temple were given real opportunities to glimpse the rift between what is real and what appears to be real, then maybe they'd begin to truly understand enlightenment. Perhaps that is my calling. At the other end of the scale, a poster called Hillary Kendrick had no complaints about the theology of the LOS. Dex wondered if she even knew that the group was a religious organization. Instead, she moaned about feeling alienated and unwelcome at meetings, charging the congregation with acting as a large clique designed to keep newcomers out. Unfortunately, her complaints were more petulant than reasoned, and at one point she emotionally threatened to tear the motherfucking place down bit by bit. There were a few more posters with complaints, each having varying degrees of a grasp on reality. Even among people who were talking about virtual existence being some kind of key to enlightenment, these folks were out there. from people talking about snubbed alien emissaries at one end to secret cabals of programmer gods at another, they were the flakes and nuts which make online conversation lively. But Dex could find nothing particularly threatening among these posters, and he moved on after amusing himself for an hour or two. He set his system to run scans for any other information about Jay Beck, K. Maddie Barton, Julio Cook, and Hillary Kendrick. While he was building the query, he downloaded the results from his search on the list of LOS members that he'd set up earlier in the day. There were a handful of matches, and Dex wanted to go through them carefully. He recognized one name immediately. Tequila Kate was someone he'd met on an investigation years earlier into the death of his client's multiple identity. Kate was an activist for the cause of tolerance and rights for self-created identities. Dex was a little surprised to see her involved in a religious group. She hadn't struck him as a spiritual type. However, he knew that the Light of the Simulacrum were very accepting of multis. He wondered if Kate was involved simply as a representative of the multi community, or if she really shared the ideas that the similes believed. The other names didn't ring any bells at Dex immediately. He scanned the list and saw that there were a couple of members of the congregation who are entrepreneurs in M-City who'd reported having their businesses targeted with vandalism themselves. He looked into the details of their cases and saw that one was the owner of a trendy cafe and bar, while the other was a broker for custom neurostim treatments. Each had experienced a temporary but catastrophic failure of their online business presence. The cafe had been rendered impossible to enter for an hour, and the neurostim broker had all her messages rerouted for over a day. He knew that Annabelle thought that the destruction at the Light of the Simulacrum Temple was a solitary targeted act, unrelated to the other instances of vandalism in M-City, but he wondered if it was all personal. Dex knew that most acts of violence aren't random, and it struck him that two members of the congregation would experience the same problems that the temple had. He speculated that maybe it was these two individuals who were the targets, rather than the congregation itself. He made some notes, and continued down the list of names. Nothing popped out at him, and he sighed. He linked out of his office and peered into his now-empty coffee cup. Another shot wouldn't help anything at this point, he knew, regardless of how tempting the idea might be. He needed something else. He needed something solid on this case. He paged over to his messenger and put in a call to Reverend Alford. "Mr. Dexter," the Reverend's strong voice came on shortly after Dex completed the call request, "do you have something for me?" "No," Dex said, "rather the opposite. I was hoping you might have something for me. I've run through the list of names you provided, but I honestly don't think it's going to lead anywhere. Do you really think that one of the leaders of your congregation is responsible for the destruction of your temple?" "No, of course not." "Well, then, maybe giving me the tools I need to do my job would be of more value," Dex said, trying to keep his voice level. There was silence on the line, and Dex wondered if he'd gone too far. "Very well," Reverend Alford said, finally. "I can provide you with a list of the members of the congregation who visited the temple the day it was... the last day it was intact." "You can?" Dex asked. "And you've kept it to yourself all this time. With all due respect, Reverend, are you trying to help this investigation or not?" "I'm sorry, Mr. Dexter," Alfred said, and Dex thought she did sound genuinely apologetic. "The congregation is naturally concerned with privacy, and I didn't want to invade anyone's more than necessary." She paused, and Dex guessed there was more to it. "What else?" he asked harshly. "Well," the Reverend said, "it's just that... it's not widely known within the congregation that this information is kept." "You're spying on your own congregation?" "No," she said, indignant. "It's just a real-time readout of activity in the temple, which I save. I don't even look at it usually. It's just part of the system, you know, to help prevent..." Her voice broke off. "You thought it might prevent something like what happened," Dex finished. "That was part of the idea," the Reverend said. "When we were designing the temple, the board thought we ought to incorporate some kind of security. The decision was made to keep the awareness of this feature to a leadership level." Dex sighed. "In my experience, surveillance doesn't usually prevent anything," Dex said. "And as you've seen happen, it doesn't even always tell you who's responsible if something does happen." "Yes, well," Alfred said, "it wasn't my decision to make. I'll forward you the list of names, but please be discreet." "I will," Dex said, "but I'm going to have to talk to these people, Reverend." "I know," she said. "I'll make it clear to everyone I talk to that you and I have access to this list and no one else. I won't even mention any names if I can help it, okay?" "Yes," she said, "that will be very satisfactory. Mr. Dexter. Dex, please. Dex, I'm sorry I didn't give you this information before. I can't imagine how useful it will be. The last recorded activity is well before the vandalism happened. Maybe we'll get lucky, Dex said. Every little bit helps, Reverend. The list was short, just 4 names. He wasn't particularly surprised. The vandalism hadn't taken place in a day when services or any other activities were scheduled for the temple, and Dex had to wonder why anyone would want to just hang out there otherwise. But Misty O'Hara, Desdemona Ashel, Roger Simmons, and Krishna Oblesk had. The Reverend had been good enough to supply contact information for each of them, and Dex was about to link back into his office to start cold calling when something stopped him. Desdemona Ashel. He couldn't remember where he'd heard that name before, so he had his system run a search. Before long, he saw that she was employed as a mid-level designer for one of the firms, working primarily with ease-of-use interfaces, whatever that was. Dex couldn't see how she would ping his memory until he read down the file into other activities. Of course, she'd been the curator of the Looking Through Doors and Windows gallery. A look at the image of her avatar jogged Dex's memory further, and he remembered meeting the woman. She was earnest and bright and was clearly a keen fan of the work. He hadn't realized when he spoke with her previously that she had ended her career as a curator. Perhaps the Looking Through Doors and Windows gallery had been the victim of some attack as well. Which would be awfully coincidental, for yet another member of the Light of the Simulacrum to be targeted. And Dex really did not like coincidences. He pulled up the contact information for Ashel and pinged her. He got put through to her, please leave a message, message. He did as the disembodied voice asked and requested that she contact him. He shuffled the files on his desk again and thought. He had a hunch, and while his hunches didn't pay off most of the time, they did once in a while, so it was worth a shot. He fired up his messenger and typed up a request to Stella Bish. He forwarded her the names and IDs of the 2 M-City entrepreneurs who were victims of attacks online, as well as the 4 LOS members who'd been in the temple the day it was destroyed. He asked Bish if she recognized any of them. After he'd sent off the message, Dex realized that he had no idea if Bish's account was online yet. He wondered what Annabelle had done to reconnect her to the online world, and guessed that there would have to be some way for Bish to tap into her messages. It would be pretty tough to run a freelancer clearinghouse without any access to communications. Dex closed his eyes and sighed. He wished he could just call Annabelle and ask, but it wasn't urgent, and he knew she needed her space. He looked over his messy office desk and realized that he'd just been sitting there staring at the manila folders for a half hour. He logged out and refocused on his apartment. He stood, used the lav, and went to the small cupboard. He pulled a food brick from the box and became uncharacteristically annoyed when the now-empty container fell to the floor. He angrily wadded it up and stuffed it into the recycler, then slotted a cup of coffee into the zapper. He ate his last food bar while the coffee heated, then walked over to the small window with his cup. He stood there, looking at the courtyard, knowing that the crankiness he was feeling was because he wanted to talk to Annabelle, but couldn't. He often was amazed by the profound effect she managed to have on him. Usually it was a good thing, but sometimes... He gazed out the window at the usual suspects out in the courtyard, doing their exercises or just hanging out. He thought he saw his neighbor Zeke talking with someone who looked a lot like Max. Dex smiled without thinking, then frowned as he remembered how much of an idiot he'd been. He swallowed the rest of the coffee without tasting it, grabbed a light jacket from his cupboard, and walked out of the apartment. Chapter 20. Dex was back in the apartment in under an hour, with a large box of Econoline food bars, a small bottle of ginger pop, and a plan. He shoved the box of food into the cupboard, popped the top of the ginger pop, and splashed a half glassful of it into his tumbler. He topped the glass off with rum and took an appreciative sip. He flopped into his chair and linked into his M-City office. He fished a message out of his inbox. He'd seen something come in while he was on his errand, but he hadn't read it. It was from Stella Bish. She had gotten back to him uncharacteristically promptly. It seemed she was very pleased with the service Dex and his colleagues had provided. She'd never heard of either Lynette Foreman or Otis Gill, the 2 M-City entrepreneurs Dex had asked after. However, she had some very interesting information about Desdemona Ashel. Stella Bish was a classic middleman. Her detractors complained that she had no real skills of her own, and it was unfair that she had somehow managed to make herself into the top business person operating in M-City. What she had done, though, was start to organize the burgeoning online businesses back when M-City was in its infancy. At that time, only a handful of people used the interface, and most of them didn't recognize its potential for freelancers. Bish saw its potential clearly, and soon became the go-to person for anything that required specialization in M-City. She started with avatar builders, virtual architects, and clothing designers. When the virtual space became more robust, she began adding programmers with other specialties to her team. Now, if you wanted to really live in M-City and had the cash to pay for it, Stella Bish could find the people to make it happen. Short of uploading your mind to the system, she could give you a whole life online. Dex guessed that she'd be the first to know about the uploading business, too, if that ever panned out. As a result, Bish knew everyone who was a star designer or programmer, and everyone wanted to get a recommendation from her. Thanks to Bish's contacts, there were more and more people like Max's daughter who were earning a good living as a freelancer online and avoiding the firms. Bish was constantly being approached by people who thought their coding chops were good enough to earn them a spot on her roster, and maybe eventually a ticket away from their day job. It turned out that Desdemona Ashel was one of those people. "Tell me everything you remember about Ms. Ashel," Dex asked, his virtual black handset tucked between his ear and his shoulder. Bish was much more amenable to taking his calls now, he noticed. "We didn't have a great deal of interaction, Mr. Dexter," Bish's velvety voice sounded inside his ear. "We were introduced by one of her artist friends, some fellow who made absolutely exquisite floral instantiations for me. She wanted a job, of course." "She wanted to be an art gallery curator for you?" Dex asked, confused. "I didn't think you went in for that kind of work." "I don't," Bish said, a trace of a laugh in her voice. "She wasn't talking to me about art. She's a programmer in her day job, fancies herself a bit of a designer, I suppose. Her work is fine, don't get me wrong. She's excellent at what she does. The trouble is that so is every other commercial designer out there. She's good, but not exceptional. And I don't have room for anyone who isn't exceptional." "She wanted to become one of your freelancers," Dex said, thinking out loud. "Very good, Mr. Dexter," Bish said, laughing freely. "I see why they call you a detective." Dex sighed, but otherwise ignored the barb. "Obviously, you turned her down." "Indeed," Bish said. "I gave her some encouragement to strike out on her own first. You know, try to pick up the odd contract or make something to show off her skills. She did have potential. She has an excellent eye, of course. If she stretched herself a little, she might become exceptional one day. Just not yet." "So it was the soft heave-ho," Dex said. "It always is, Mr. Dexter," Bish replied. "I may be a shark, but there's no reason to be cruel." "Fair enough," Dex said, pondering this new information. "So what about your situation?" he went on. "Anyone been particularly threatening of late? Maybe someone who saw a little more shark than usual?" Bish made a little thinking noise that Dex didn't believe at all. "There isn't anything in particular I can point to," she said, "but one doesn't get to be at the top of one's profession without making a few enemies along the way." "Names, Miss Bish." Now, Mr. Dexter," she said, her voice taking on that infuriating seductive tone. "There isn't anyone whom I'd care to name. No one has actually threatened me, ever. But, of course, any of my competitors would be happy to see me out of business. Still, I find it hard to believe that any of them would go to these lengths to accomplish such a thing, particularly after all this time. Nothing new has happened, so why attack me now?" She paused for breath. "No, Mr. Dexter," she said, "I think you're looking in the wrong place." "Perhaps, Ms. Bish," Dex said, "but I'll never find anything if I don't look." She laughed, a silvery sound that tickled Dex's inner ears. "True enough, Mr. Dexter," she said, "true enough." As she was speaking, Dex's messenger window appeared on his visual overlay, and he saw that Annabelle was pinging him. "I'm afraid I have to go, Ms. Bish," Dex said. "I'll be in touch." He broke the contact without waiting for her reply, and answered Annabelle. "I'm sorry," he said, before she could even say hello. "I know," she said, "and I'm sorry too." "You don't need to apologize," Dex said, but then Annabelle broke in. "No, I do," she said. "I know you didn't just forget to mention meeting Max, and you shouldn't have hidden it like you did, but I shouldn't have gotten all jealous and possessive either. I had a right to be angry, but not because you may or may not have been sleeping with someone else. We've never made any claims on each other, and I had no right to act as if we did." Dex began to say something, but Annabelle cut him off again. "Maybe that's something we need to talk about, but it really isn't what's significant here. Why I really got upset is because you felt that you had to keep something from me. Something that is obviously important to you. I know Max meant a lot to you, that he still means a lot to you. Having him in your life again has to be a strange and wonderful experience. And I want to share those kinds of experiences with you. I want to be a part of your whole life, not just one part of your life. Do you understand what I mean? Dex was quiet for a moment, not wanting to answer glibly. Finally, he said, "Yes, I think I do understand." He paused again, searching for the right words to try to pin down the maelstrom of feelings. "I think I was just afraid," he said. "Afraid of what?" "Everything," Dex said. "Afraid that you'd be jealous. Afraid that I would give you cause to be jealous. I didn't know how to react that night. I didn't really even know how I felt about the whole thing. I think, deep down, I was scared that I would want to leave this life I've made for myself, for the two of us, and just go back in time. I wanted that for so long that I was afraid that once the possibility appeared, I'd just revert back." Annabelle was quiet. Eventually, she said, "And? Is that how you feel?" "No," he said easily. "After our night out at Lowell's, I thought about it a lot. Watched some of the old videos, had a good think. And it was so clear then. I'm not the man I used to be anymore. And the man I am now wants to be here, with you." His voice wavered a little and he paused again, getting himself together. "I'm sorry, Annabelle. I'll try to do better in the future, if you'll let me." "It hasn't been easy for us," Annabelle said after a long pause. "And we've both worked hard to make this relationship happen. I'm not willing to throw all that effort away now. But I want to be the one you call when things happen, whatever they may be. Good or bad, even if you think it's going to piss me off. I want you to want to tell me things. That's what friends do. That's what partners do. Okay?" Dex grinned, and although he knew Annabelle couldn't see it, he guessed that she could hear it in his voice. "Deal," he said. "Good," she said. "Okay," Dex said after a happy pause. "Now that we've got that sorted out, I have a question for you."
"Shoot."
"How come you came by my apartment? You never drop by."
"Oh, that," Annabelle said, her voice becoming wary.
"Yeah, I'll tell you about that later. Maybe we can meet up at La Retro in a couple of hours. Maybe talk a little shop?"
Dex frowned.
Annabelle was never this reticent about information, and her wanting a work meeting in person was unprecedented. Still, Dex could tell that she had her reasons, so he followed her lead.
"Sure," he said. "I'll see you there."
"Good," Annabelle said, her voice sounding relieved. "Invite Biagini, too." She broke the connection, and Dex wondered what the hell was going on. So far, Annabelle had managed to avoid Renee, and the two had never actually met. Something very strange was going on. Dex was sitting in his office chair, feet propped up on the desk and hat low over his forehead. He wasn't sleeping. That wasn't something that was particularly possible in M-City, but he was letting his avatar be still and was just thinking. His reverie was disturbed by a knock on the glass door. The sound startled him, and he nearly knocked his hat across the room before he got control of his virtual self.
"Come in," Dex said, triggering the link to allow whoever was in the hallway to enter his office space.
A serious-looking woman entered, her avatar a trendy but conservative form. Dex stood, put his hat on the hat rack near the desk, and extended his hand across the scarred wood surface. "Kay Barton," the woman introduced herself. "You wanted to see me about the attack in the light of the Simulacrum Temple."
"Have a seat, Ms. Barton," Dex said as she sat primly across from him.
"You were aware of the vandalism before I contacted you, is that correct?"
She nodded sharply.
"I follow news from all the religious organizations operating in M-City. As I'm sure you know, I am a vocal critic of religion, particularly within our virtual communities."
Tex nodded. "Yes, that's why I wanted to speak with you."
Barton looked directly at Dex and said, "I'm sure you think I may have had something to do with the vandalism. I know that some of my articles can be a little, shall we say, over the top in tone. However, I did not attack the temple. I believe that action like that is counterproductive. No one gets more sympathy than a congregation with a desecrated church. It makes those of us who rightly criticize their ideas look like vultures. Any time a religious group has something destroyed or damaged, they get public sympathy for a time immediately after. It's the opposite of useful to my cause, Mr. Dexter."
"I understand, Ms. Barton," Dex said.
"However, are you certain that all the people who follow you and subscribe to your ideas share that view?"
She frowned.
"Of course, that's not possible," she said. "I can't be sure of what anyone else believes.
Do I think that it's possible that someone read what I wrote and took it into their heads to vandalize the LOS temple? Yes, it's possible. Do I think it's likely? Not in the slightest. She crossed her legs and leaned in toward Dex. I've been pointing out the obvious contradictions and flaws in the ideas of the Light of the Simulacrum for years, and I've been using the same rhetoric all along. It strikes me as unlikely that, all of a sudden, someone begins to read it as a call to destroy the building. However, if you like, I can supply you with a list of the commenters to my board. It's a public board, and everyone needs to supply identifying information. I'd appreciate that, Ms. Barton, Dex said and watched as she pulled a sheet of paper from her briefcase. You came prepared, Dex commented. Barton smiled without warmth. I had a fairly good idea what you wanted, Mr. Dexter, she said. I see no reason to make it difficult on either of us. Dex took the file, which contained several hundred names. He'd look at it later, but he wondered strongly if he was barking up the wrong tree. Barton stood, and Dex followed her lead. He opened his door and saw her out. I appreciate your time, he said and smiled. I'm always willing to help, she said. I don't approve of the LOS or any of the others, but they ought to have the same rights as the rest of us. What do you mean? People and their property ought to be free from the threat of harm, Barton said, in the physical world and in M-City. That's the point of people like you, isn't it? Indeed, Dex said, as he closed the door on her. You've been listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information about this and the other Anderson Dexter stories, please visit darusha.ca/dex. The theme music is First We Take Manhattan, performed by Donovan Alex and Yoko Rocks. More information at soundcloud.com/donovan-alex. Thanks for listening.